Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning the last Aliyah, Devarim Shvi'i, the last Aliyah of the Parashas Devarim. Our Aliyah is only 8 psukim long, and it talks about the division of the east bank of the Jordan. It runs from Perek Gimel, Pasuk Tezov, to Chav Beis. A basic summary is that Machir gets the area of Gilad. Remember, Machir is one of the children of Menashe. And we then hear about Reuven and Gad get the area from Gilad to Arnon, until Yabok HaNachal, by the area of Benei Amon. And Moshe then reiterates his condition with the tribes of Gad and Reuven, that before they go in, before they settle down in the land, they need to leave their families and flocks and go into battle, send their troops into battle with the rest of Israel until Israel inherits their land fully. Moshe then explains that he commands Yehoshua that at this time, that this is just as what was done to Sichon and Og, these two nations, will be done to the rest of the nations that Israel are about to inherit. They should not fear them, because just as Hashem did to these kings, He will do to all these nations. Hashem will fight all your battles. So this is seen as a model. A few basic questions is, it's interesting, does the condition of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, that the children of Gad and Reuven needed to accept, did that apply to Menashe as well? And the Netziv points out, all the Mefarshim point out, no. The Netziv actually points out that the area given to Menashe was disproportionately large, meaning it was only half a tribe, and he got a very large section of the northern territory of Transjordan East. So why was this? So he points out that halachically speaking, the Transjordan, the East Bank, is not the same level of Kedusha, of holiness, as the land of Israel itself. It was one step lower for a number of reasons. And what Moshe did to try to remedy this was he gave them a tribe which had among them very great and old leaders. So he sent people like Yair, people like Bachir. These are people from very old generations, very great tzaddikim, righteous people, to settle there to help elevate the area. In fact, he quotes a fascinating Gemara, the Talmud Yerushalmi Bikurim, in the first parak, and there's the Gemara says that you do not bring Bikurim, you do not bring the first fruits from Transjordan East. It didn't have the same halachic status. The Gemara says, why not? The Gemara presents two possibilities. One is that that you only bring Bikurim from Eretz Zavas D'Chalav D'Vash, a land flowing with milk and honey, and the Transjordan East was not considered Eretz Zavas D'Chalav D'Vash. The other reason the Gemara gives is because it has to be from the land Asher Nasata Li Hashem, and Hashem gave to me. That's part of the proclamation by the person bringing Bikurim. And this land was not given. It was requested by Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. So the Gemara says, is there a difference between these two reasons as to why Bikurim is not brought on Transjordan? The Gemara says, yes. The land of Menashe on the Transjordan was not requested, it was given. So therefore, technically speaking, according to the second reason, they would be able to bring Bikurim from the area of Menashe. And Netziv uses this as an example to say that Menashe was seen as a way to elevate the Torah leadership that was sent specifically to Transjordan under Moshe Rabbeinu, was seen as a way to elevate the area, and in fact it had a different halachic status as well. Two more questions. One is why is Yehoshua being commanded not to fear? Right at this point, why is this here? So Arachai HaKadosh says, well, you see, because there's a misnomer that could have been could have happened over here. Yehoshua hears all of this business about this big condition that's being reiterated about Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, and they have to send their troops and stay behind. And there could be a fallacy which is understood from here, which is that we really need the troops. We really need the boots on the ground. This is going to be a tough battle coming. We need every eligible soldier on the battlefield. And Yehoshua, therefore, would think in terms of natural battles. And Moshe is saying, no, don't get confused. Actually, the battles are going to be like the battles of Sichon and Og, which are going to be miraculous or semi-miraculous. So Yehoshua, don't get scared. Don't get scared when you hear me keep on making this condition with Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. Which means, if you push this Orach Haim a little further, the condition made with Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven really wasn't about actually the troops themselves. It wasn't as if they needed these troops. It was more about their attitude, their communal versus individual-centric attitude towards the nation. And Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to rectify that, but not because of the need of the troops itself. Finally, one last point to notice is that the second last pasuk of the parasha does seem a little bit incongruous. It says that everything Hashem did to the Shnei HaMlachim HaEleh, to these two kings, Ken Yaseh L'Kol HaMamlachos, Hashem will do to all the kingdoms or the states. So he starts off with Melachim and he ends off with Mamlachos. Starts off with kings and he ends off with states. Why is the comparison being, as he did to these two kings, will be done to all the states? So the Oznaim LaTorah, Rav Sorotskin, points out that Sichon and Og were the two most terrifying kings on both sides of the Jordan, which is why they're being singled out, and which is why their falling is so significant for the conquest of the land of Canaan. However, the other nations on the inside of Israel had more fearsome states. It wasn't about the king, it was about the nations. So Hashem is saying, by extrapolation, what was done to the kings will be done to the nation states. And don't worry, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will cover you. This closes our parsha, Parshas Devarim. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.